The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
But when God allows pain in your life, more often than not, it's a promotion. It's Him saying your shoulders are wide enough to carry this in a way that you'll bring me glory. And I think when people have been through stuff, I know some of the times you've prayed for me and spoken to me when I was in the dark, if you hadn't had your own difficulty, I'd be like, you're driving me nuts. Like, get away from me, Pollyanna.
Lisa Harper, next on Life Today.
Hi, welcome to Life Today. I'm Sheila Walsh, and I'm really glad you decided just to sit down, get yourself a cup of tea or coffee, and join me. I don't know how you think, as you think back on 2020, I don't know how you felt about the presence of God in the midst of the suffering you saw. And I actually found comfort, unusually, in a book I would not have expected. And that was in the book of Job. I actually found some redemption I hadn't seen before. And then I heard that one of my favorite people on the planet has done a Bible study on Job. And so I said, I have to have Lisa Harper here. Lisa, I have to tell you, first of all, welcome to Life Today.
Thank you. This is probably
one of my favorite studies that you have ever done. You wouldn't expect to find comfort in the book of Job.
No. I was actually doing a word study for a class on the word happy in the Bible, because you know, usually it's translated in our English Bibles as blessed, but it's in the Old Testament, it's Asher, New Testament, it's Machairos. And I was doing a study on that, and I sense, you know, sometimes God will speak to you and you go, surely that was just caffeine. Like that could not have been the voice of the Lord in my heart and mind. But I sense God wanting me to study Job and to study suffering at the same time I was studying happiness. And I was like, ooh, yikers. I have avoided Job like the plague, no pun intended, my whole life. But he was just insistent that I study the book of Job. And I mean, I spent a year in the book of Job.
Wow.
Before I ever wrote a word. And it was so personally healing for me, because I was afraid of pain my whole life. I thought if I sat in the deep end for too long, I was afraid it would swallow me and I wouldn't be able to get out of it. And one of the first things you see in Job is that, you know, pain isn't, it's not punitive in the economy of God when He allows. I'm not saying all pain is divinely causative, but when God allows pain in your life, more often than not, it's a promotion. It's Him saying your shoulders are wide enough to carry this in a way that you'll bring me glory. And I think when people have been through stuff, I know some of the times you've prayed for me and spoken to me when I was in the dark, if you hadn't had your own difficulty, I'd be like, you're driving me nuts. Like, get away from me, Pollyanna. You know, go get a Tweety Bird tattoo. Because it just wouldn't have carried weight. But knowing you had suffered yourself and had walked through it and sensed God's presence, it's like your words carry weight. You become kind of a spiritual E.F. Hutton. Only the over 40s who are listening will get that. But, you know, all of a sudden you go, I have a credible testimony, because it hasn't always been easy, but He has always been accessible.
One of the things that, to me, is the most fascinating, and I want you to dig deeper because you're a deep well, is that when all the bad news comes to Job, when it all comes, that suddenly you see the presence of devastating pain and worship.
Oh, that was like my favorite. It's the end, toward the end of chapter one. I want to say it's somewhere in the 20s, 20, 22 or something, Job chapter one. And he's lost everything. You know, he's lost everybody. His children have been killed. He's lost his health. He's lost his wealth. And he was a big deal. You know, he would have been traded, you know, on Wall Street. I always think it was cool because his wealth was in agriculture, and I tend to be drawn toward guys in Wranglers more than skinny jeans, so I kind of like that part of Job. But he was a legitimately wealthy man and a good guy. It says before he lost all that he helped the poor and the powerless. He loses everything through no fault of his own. So he doesn't do anything. There's no hidden sin. And you would think he'd be mad or he... you know, there's a million ways I would have reacted. He's very honest about his grief. It says he tears his robe, which is a sign of deep grief in that ancient era, and he shaves his head. So he's not faking it, not pretending like everything's okay. But in that very same verse, it says he grieves, he tears his robe, shaves his head, and he worships. Mm-hmm. And when I saw that, I went, no stinking way that you can have a broken heart and raised hands at the same time. That it's not incongruent to be in grief and praise God, knowing that somehow, some way, even if I don't see it with my natural eyes, you are good and I'm going to trust you. And so he was, I love his honest response. He grieves. He even gets mad at God, and God allows that. But he doesn't doubt God's presence.
Yeah.
Yeah, Job changed my life. For so long, I was afraid to go, to really grieve, to really go to the deepest places of pain, even from my past. Some of the stuff we have similar stories with, some of the abuse, and I had some molestation. And I just didn't want to go there. And when I went there, I realized, oh my goodness, I didn't realize to trust God in the dark meant that he took a lid off my joy. I actually have experienced so much more joy.
Isn't that interesting?
And liberty. I was bound by fear for a long time, and it really was diving deep into the book of Job and seeing this unlikely joy. And, you know, before everything's restored, I love the end. I mean, I love the whole book of Job. There's so many lessons. But when he says, my ears had heard of you, but now my eyes have seen you. And it's before anything's restored.
I know.
He's still broken. He's still, you know, just in every way, another human would look at him and say, that's the saddest life I've ever seen. And yet Job says, I have seen you. And I love that that's before everything was restored. But yeah, that book, more than, I've always, of course, loved the New Testament. I love the Psalms because it's God's iPod. But I had avoided the book of Job, and that book more than, it would be among my top three or four of scripture now.
I'm thinking of some of our viewers. I'll get regular letters from viewers. Some are in prison, some are...
Sure.
Some have lost everything. I mean, you know, a kind of a minuscule version of Job. And then along come the friends. Hmm. And obviously I put that
in... Three Stooges.
Yeah. But they almost re-emphasize this kind of belief of, well, you must have done something.
You must have done something. You know, even when we talk about God as sovereign, I think most of us live our lives under this kind of canopy of deservedness. If you live a good life, there's some scale somewhere, some ethereal scale. If you do right, then good things will happen. That's not biblically defensible. That's karma. And that's what his friends say. His friends are like, surely there's something you've done, maybe some late night stuff on your iPad. I mean, have you got something secret? Because surely you brought this on yourself. One of them goes so far as to say, your children deserve to die.
I know, which was just...
And you go, what a moron. I mean, I think one of the things we can learn from Job, real basic, is if you get to walk alongside a friend or family member who's grieving, you don't have to say much.
Right.
Don't give them advice. Don't cross-stitch a verse. Just walk with them.
Yeah.
Pray for them. But at the very beginning, when his friends were good comforters, all they did was sit with him on the ash heap.
Yeah, 7 days, Sheba. Yeah. I know, that was... Yeah. But, you know, I think of the people who are told, I'm sorry your daughter got raped, but if she hadn't been dressed like that.
Right,
or, you know...
Right.
Just the way that
foolishness.
The way that we place blame onto people. But there's something about the umbrella of the sovereignty of God and Job. But it's, to me, it seems like you have to get to know him.
You do. And you have to get to trust him in the dark.
Yeah.
I think we're always going, okay, God, if you'll show me the other part of the story where, you know, I have tight skin and high metabolism, then I'll do the hard stuff for you. But Job just gets to that point of, it's that Habakkuk point, though you slay me, yet will I trust you because somehow, some way, because you are a perfect redeemer. I love that Job uses the word redeemer.
I know.
For Jesus, you know, after basically saying, this is the worst thing ever. I'm going to go eat a worm. Usually the only verse anybody knows about Job comes from Nicole Mullen when she says, my Redeemer lives. We all know that one verse. But to understand the context of that verse that Job is just about to throw in the towel, and then he goes, and he uses the word goel, you know, which is a word that they didn't use in that context. It's like he sees Jesus. He sees the shadow of Jesus before the 2,000 years before Jesus comes. And he goes, my Jesus is coming.
Wow.
My Redeemer lives. And so all this in the context of Jesus, this is okay. It's hard and I'm grieving and I don't like it. Mm-hmm. But in the context of divine redemption, I'll walk this out too. And so, yeah, it's a beautiful story. But to me, the thing I always come back to is got this, because we tend to think Satan did this. Satan's a bit player. You don't hear from him again after chapter 2. Even the word God uses in the Hebrew of God having a conversation with Satan, it's not a face-to-face conversation. It's not peer-to-peer.
I was going to ask you about that.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Well, I don't remember how to pronounce the word. All of my Hebrew sounds German because I can't do the guttural Hebrew thing. But the word there, when it says, you know, God and Satan are talking, they're talking about it. He's saying, can I sift him? Because he's saying, yeah, he looks like a good guy. But as soon as he loses all of his followers on Instagram and, you know, he's gonna curse you. And so God's like, no, you can mess with Job. It's almost like his faithfulness is what made him credible to be in pain. You're like, surely if you live a good life, nothing bad will happen. Job lives such a good life that God said he will be faithful no matter what. But the word to describe that conversation with Satan, and I always call him the lizard, the liar, is he condescended to let the enemy speak.
I love to know
Don't
that.
Don't you love that?
Yeah.
And then later on, when he speaks to Job, it's a totally different Hebrew word for conversation. He allows Job to have a relational conversation with him, not as a master with a slave, but as one who loves somebody else. I love just even that nuance.
Lisa, that's huge.
Isn't that huge?
Barry and I were sitting talking about that just last night at dinner of, you know, why was this lizard allowed to stand right in front of God and talk to him?
And you go, God was going to use Job's story to teach us in the same way he did with Homer, you know, Hosea and Gomer. You're like, oh my goodness, I'm so sure. You know, the good guy marries the girl with a 1-900 number. It doesn't make sense in our human logic. And God is not capricious. He's not punking us. But God goes, I'm going to show you a higher way, a bigger way.
Wow.
This very, very good man is going to lose everything. And he is going to walk this out in a way that ultimately ends up for his good, but it brings me glory because he knows me, and he's not gonna lose his hope when his circumstances are the opposite of what he even prayed for. And so, it'll blow your hard drive because you go, pain is a promotion. Like that just doesn't compute, because again, we tend to live in that you deserve what you get. You know, a friend that you know of mine, Eva Whittington Self, was paralyzed in a car accident when she was 17. And I mean, I always say in the world of faith, she walks a lot faster than I do. I love her the way I love you. But oftentimes I'll be with Eva. Her spine was shattered, severed actually in this car accident. But because she's in a wheelchair, we'll be places where people will go, if only you had more faith.
Oh, gosh.
You wouldn't be in that wheelchair. And, you know, I want to punch him in the throat. Her response is much more redemptive. But Eva will say, you know, God actually gave me this chair. He could have fused my back together had he wanted. But this chair has taken me places that I never would have seen. I never would have met my husband. I never would have had my daughters. I know, you know, she sees it as a means of grace. Mm. We tend to see pain as always destructive.
Right.
But David said, in your faithfulness, you've afflicted me. You've allowed me to ache so that I'll actually turn to you. And I think that's part of it, too, is ache can accelerate us moving toward the Lord for comfort.
You know, I remember being at a big speaking at a conference in Hawaii, and there was an evangelist from Africa, and he made this declaration, everybody here in the room tonight is going to be healed. And I'd met this amazing guy who'd been in a wheelchair for 11 years after a bad motorcycle accident. And, you know, the evangelist spoke, prayed, and then was rushed off in a limo, you know, back to the airport. And eventually the tent empties out and there's just my friend still in the wheelchair and me. And so I walked up to him and he could tell, because I was crying, and he said, Sheila, come on, don't cry. Right. I know God could heal me, but until he does, I'll worship from here.
That's right. That's right.
And that just blew me away.
And we see it from such this narrow human perspective of, oh, that's bad, instead of, oh, I wonder how God is going to use that for good.
Wow.
Because I'm not, my mind is too dinky to see something that's hard. You know, had I not, you walked with me when I lost an adoption at the 11th hour, that, I mean, it ripped my guts out. I was, you know, I was so, I had the, you know, the room decorated, I had the baby named. It was 4 days before I was bringing her home when that fell through. And I remember thinking, I don't think I'm going to be able to peel my heart up off the pavement after this one. I'm just not sure that I can actually, I mean, I'll, you know, I'll keep walking, but I just don't think I'm ever going to be able to lift my head up again. And had it not been for that excruciating loss and the grief, God used that, and I'm not saying that was God's will, but he always uses what the enemy intends for evil, to just plow up the places in my heart that were afraid. Because I don't think I would have, when they said there's a little girl in Haiti whose mama died of AIDS and she's been given 2 months to live, would you consider stepping? I wouldn't have been brave enough to do that. I would have been like, no, thank you, that's too scary. Had I not been through that dark season and God just carried me, I don't think I would have been prepared for the joy he had planned for
me. What I remember about that was, I was with you and the person said to you, why don't you pray about this? And you said, no, I've been praying about this for a long, long time.
Yeah.
It's...
I am so slow to understand. I am so remedial when it comes to God's kindness. But I love Psalm 84:11, no good thing will he withhold from him whose walk is upright.
Wow.
So to me, that's even Job. If you keep moving toward Jesus, whether you're limping, crawling, just keep moving toward Jesus, he will redeem it. There will be good things in your story. And so many people listen to you who are in grief right now. And I think the world tells them, just paste a happy face on it. Because the world has a hard time handling grief. Mostly it's like, well, you know, we'll grieve for that. We'll sit shiver for 7 days.
Right.
After that, you know, put on your big girl pants and quit whining. And to actually walk in a way that's redemptive with someone who aches, someone who's lost a child, someone who lost their job with COVID, and to go, I'm not going to say a platitude. I'm not going to say something pithy. I just believe that God will use this ultimately for your good, but you can trust him enough to cry with him.
It's interesting, too, Lisa, at the end of Job's story, that, I mean, you have these three friends and then the young dude, you know, who're supposedly saying all the right things. But in the end, the only one that God says spoke rightly about him was Job.
That's right.
He kind of cuts those guys down. It's like, if Job doesn't pray for you guys, you're
really
in the hot seat.
That's right. You know what I think is so cool there, too, is his wife gets such a bad rap because she says, curse God and die. But she's lost her children.
Yeah, she buried 10 children.
I can't even imagine what I would say if God allowed me to lose Missy. And so you're like, oh, my goodness, let the poor woman grieve and say a few bad words in traffic. I mean, she's been through heck and back. But God doesn't discipline her. At the end of the story, she is reconciled with Job. And then, you know, they have more children. And he names the daughters.
Yeah.
And in that culture, women weren't named because their names were considered profane. And he gives them an inheritance. So I go, my goodness, even there, the redemption is so much, it's much bigger than would have happened in human context.
Wow.
God's ways are always better.
For any gift at all, we're going to send you the Job study, which you're going to want the study guide, but you're going to want it, is it like seven teaching sessions you've got, videos? So you're going to want to go on to Lifeway.com?
Lifeway.com, and they're like, maybe $2, $3 a piece for the teaching that goes concurrently.
You're going to want those. You're going to want it because you can tell when you've sat in a book of God for a year, the wealth that pours out is amazing. But one of the things I would like to ask you to do for us, one of the greatest passions of my heart here at Life is what we call Rescue Life. where we go and reach, rescue and restore girls who've been caught up in sex trafficking. Mm. And I want to take you with me and let you see what happened on our very last trip.
There's a little trick that's helped me through some of my darkest days in the field with Life Outreach International. I smile. I smile not to trivialize the unimaginable despair of those who are suffering, but to remind everyone, including myself, that a little kindness can bring some light to a dark world. And it can be such a dark world. The sexual abuse of children has been industrialized and brought to scale in what I believe to be one of the starkest examples of demonic activity on Earth today. I asked her, who do you have who is caring for you? She has no one. She started out trying to sell cookies, and she couldn't make enough to live on. So she ended up having to sell her own body. Now, I am no stranger to the plight of a desperate soul, but the young women I've spoken with, young children, have left a mark on my life that will stay with me forever. This precious girl was begging for money on the streets when she was first abducted. At the age of 9, her captors raped her and forced her to sleep with up to 4 men a night. It's horrific to think of the unspeakable torment that children face, and I'm grateful when they survive it. But survival is a far cry from healing. God has given you and me the sacred power to help reach, rescue, and restore a precious life from the evils of human trafficking. Right now, the choice of whether to exercise that power is ours to make.
You know, I love all our missions here at Life. I love when we have our Water for Life. I love Mission Feeding. I love it all. But I don't think anything has scarred my heart as much as Rescue Life. You know, in Southeast Asia, so many of the countries where we work, I've seen girls, I mean, they're literally, they're not 18, 19, they're 10, 11, and 12. They are little girls, and they have been sold and told that they are worthless. So many of them have a number tattooed to their thigh, so the guy doesn't even have to know their name. They can just say, I'll take number 3. And so many of you have written and said, well, why are they out there? Where are their parents? So many of these girls that I have been with, their father's in prison, they're in debt. You know, if you have to get medicine for a child, they have to borrow money from money lenders, then they're in debt. And what else is the girl to do? Most of them go out at night between about 11 o'clock at night till 2 in the morning, and they gather up beer cans from outside the clubs because they can sell like 6 or 8 cans for like the equivalent of like a quarter. But that's when they're trying to do that and they're trying to help the family, that's when they're snatched. Sometimes they're given a meal. What they don't know is the meal is drugged and they wake up in the morning and suddenly all their innocence is gone. So, I mean, we are committed here at Life for as long as the Lord tarries. We are committed to this mission. What we want to do is 3 parts. Reach. First of all, we go into the villages and we warn the children. I mean, some of the things we've had to tell children, I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe we're doing this. It's probably the most important news they'll ever get. You know, if you see this, if a man says this, run. Shout as loud as you can. Never go out by yourself. Always go out with a friend. So we teach them. Then we rescue. I mean, some of the teams we have, literally we'll go in at midnight and kick down doors and rescue these darling little ones and watch these traffickers being hauled off to prison. But then we have so many beautiful places that you have helped us build where these girls can come and be restored. Be told you're not a number, that you are precious, that you matter to God, you have a future, you have a hope. So please, would you help us? We have some amazing friends who have given us a matching gift for this whole mission. $320,000 is a matching gift. Normally, it would take about $128 to put a girl in that process of being reached, rescued, restored. But now if you could do $64, that will be matched. So together with somebody you might not meet till we're all home, you'll have that impact. 128, normally one girl. but because it's a match gift too. If you're able to give $1,280, that will be matched, and 20 girls will be literally snatched from the gates of hell and brought into freedom and told that they're loved. So please, would you call? Just give what you can. And together, when we all do that, we will invade the kingdom of darkness with the kingdom of light in Jesus' name.
Human trafficking is one of the world's darkest sources of criminal activity and money. As a result, children and young people are being abducted and sold at the hands of violent predators into a never-ending nightmare. Through Mission Rescue Life, you can reach out to warn children who are at the risk of being trafficked, rescue those already enslaved, and restore young lives, giving them a future. With a generous $320,000 matching gift, now your gift of $128 to help reach, rescue, or restore one child can be double to help two children. Your $64 gift will be matched to help save one child from the horrors of human trafficking. And a $32 mission rescue gift will be doubled to $64. With your gift today, we'll send you Natural Remedies. This beautifully illustrated and essential book explores ancient nutrition and the health benefits found in God's creation. A valuable reference with biblical insight to help you live your best life. With your gift of $128 or more, you'll receive the Jesus My Refuge journal and pen set, filled with scriptures reminding you of God's covering in times of need. You'll also be reminded to pray for those seeking refuge from the horrors of human trafficking. Finally, please consider a gift of $1,280, which will now help rescue 20 children, and you may request our inspiring bronze sculpture, Divine Servant. Please call, write, or make your gift online.
Thank you. Thank you for caring. This really, really matters. Mm. This is not just poverty. This is an attack from hell.
That's right.
And we can do something in Jesus' name. And I know that's close to your heart, too.
Oh, you know, Missy would have been trafficked in Haiti. There's some places where God rescued her. But yeah, this is very, very close to my heart. And just, you can't believe that this still exists in our world. This kind of wickedness and just the horror of it. I love that y'all are doing this.
You know, I don't know if you know this. It's a $150 billion industry.
Yeah.
We need to match that. So ask for Lisa's Job study. It's amazing. Thank you for diving deep into Job. It's really made an impact. Thanks for being here with us.
I love being with you.
Loved it.
I'm going to follow you home.
We will see you next time. Thanks so much for being with us here at Life. I'm Sheila Walsh, and I'll see you next time.
Give your life to your father, the one who helped you see, won't leave you recklessly.
Tomorrow, James and Betty explain what it looks like when you lose your life for kingdom purpose.
That's what God did with me, Betty. And by the way, he can do it with any of us.
Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.